Okay. Good morning. Today's shiur is sponsored by the Nishmas of Shaila. I don't see any food yet, but I think the food will be here eventually. Last week we ended off talking about the story of the Bach's life. So we ended off talking about the Bach's brief, or maybe not so brief, sojourn through Gehenim, and his ability to pull out, you know, different neshamas that were trapped there and bring them with him. Now that concept of a tzaddik being able to do that is discussed extensively. The Rebbeinu Nissim Eibshitz talks about it, the Shlach talks about it, the Bach himself talks about it, and the Nebi Yehuda talks about it, and obviously in the more explicitly Kabbalistic Svarim, it's talked about more explicitly. Now I just decided we'll go down this rabbit hole for 1 week of Gehenim a little bit, and then we'll get back on track. So the way I want to come at this is as follows. In 2001, an ancient remnant of a shul, maybe possibly the oldest shul in the Americas, not America, but the Americas, you know, like South America, North America, the oldest shul in this whole side of the world, was refurbished. They discovered the ancient mikveh that had been in the basement of the shul. They figured out which buildings were the shul, and they refurbished it and turned it into what could be called an active shul today. I think it was called the Tzor Yisrael Shul. It was in Recife, Brazil. Recife, Brazil is like northeast Brazil. It's like the, you know, like on the northeast corner of Brazil. They took this ancient shul, they found the mikveh, they built it into a sanctuary, and it looks exactly how a shul from the 1600s would look. And this became like a cultural icon of Brazilian Jewry. And people go there to make their bar mitzvahs and their bat mitzvahs and their dinners and events. It became like a very central... Now, there was a Chabad Shliach in São Paulo, Brazil, a much bigger, much more current city of Brazilians, you know, where Jews live. His name was Rabbi Yosef Whiteman. And he decided that a mascaris for a community is not complete with just the physical edifice that used to belong to the community, meaning just refurbishing a shul that belonged to a community from hundreds of years ago does nothing for said community. And he decided to go and collect all the tshuvas and the psakim and the drushes that were written and said by the great rabbis of Recife in the 1600s and publish them in a sefer. Because the true way to remember a community is by the words of its Talmid HaChamim and then whatever took place in that community. Now that ended up being a 3-volume set of Sfarim called Kisvi Rabbi Yitzchak Abuav of Di Fonseca, the Chachmei Recife. The Ksavim of the Rabbi Yitzchak Abuav of Recife, where he was the Rav, and other contemporary Chachamim in his day. Now, Rabbi Yitzchak Abuav of Di Fonseca is the third of the Rabbi Yitzchak Abuavs. There's probably more, but there's 3 famous Rabbi Yitzchak Abuavs. There's Rabbi Yitzchak Abuav, who was a Rishon. He wrote the Menoras Hamar, which is a Musa Sefer. There's Rabbi Yitzchak Abuav, who was from the quasi Rishonim Achronim, who was like a Rebbe sort of the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef quotes him as Harav HaGadol, like a, you know, an older contemporary of the Beis Yosef. And then the third Rabbi Yitzchak Abuav was Rabbi Yitzchak Abuav, who was a Rav in Recife, who had been a Rav in Amsterdam, had been a Dayan in Amsterdam, and ends up moving to Brazil to become a Rav there. Now, it's a little bit odd. This part is a drop of conjecture, but it's a shtickle odd that a brand name Rav, who had been a Dayan in Amsterdam and a big Kehila, ended up like on the farthest stretches of the world, you know, in Recife as a Rav for almost 2 decades. And I started wondering why, you know, why he might have ended up there. And this, I came across in the Sefer and elsewhere that there's 2 very prominent Moshe Bezdin's or Dine Tero arguments that took place in Amsterdam when Rabbi Yitzchak Abuav still lived there. And it might explain how he ended up in Recife. And I'll tell you as follows. So Indian number one is, this is like a famous cherem, one of the most famous charamis that ever took place in the Jewish world, is the cherem of Baruch Spinoza, Benedict Spinoza. I'm sure some people heard of him, some people didn't hear of him. Benedict Spinoza was a Jew from Murano Stock, you know, like all the Jews in Amsterdam was. The Amsterdam Kehila in the 1600s, we're talking about in the 1600s, was all Jews who had formerly been living as Christians, you know, for a certain tkufa of their life. They came back and they were, you know, building a new community. And in 1600, give or take, they ended up in Amsterdam. They started one shul, another shul. Ultimately, they combined into like a kehila umbrella, where they formed like one main kehila for the whole kehila of Amsterdam, for all the Murano Jews in Amsterdam. And they had many shuls, many yeshivas, many chesed organizations. I saw a list of like all the chesed organizations and stuff. It would sound very familiar to what we have. You know, it would sound very familiar to what you're used to. Lamashal, they had a chevras balchuva. First of all, they had like a balchuva yeshiva. It was called chevras balchuva for balichuva who were coming back at the time. They had Beis HaChayim, which has to do with the dead, the Bikur Chaylim, Pidin Shvuyin, Chayin and Dalim, Chesed Ve'emes, Gvul Almana. They had like endless stock organizations that would sound very familiar. There was Yeshivas, Eitz Chaim, Keser Teira, Teira Ar, Tveres Bachurim. You go anywhere now, you can find Yeshivas with the same names, you know, Chesed organizations with the same names. So they built themselves into a very substantial Kehillah in the 1600s in Amsterdam. And they had very Chashav Adayanim. They had the Av Bezdin at the time was someone by the name of Shalom Murtara. He was the Av Bezdin. He was a very traditional classic Talmud Chacham and also a big philosopher and Darshan. The Svarim that we have from today is a sefer called Givat Shaul, which is 45 drushes on all different inyanim in the Torah. So Shalom Murtara was the Av Bezdin, and then some of the members of the Bezdin was Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yitzchak Abuav, this person that we're talking about, the protagonist of our story, Rabbi Yitzchak Abuav. The Menashe ben Yisrael was a dayan on that Bezdin. And Rabbi Moshe de Aguilar, other famous, you know, Sephardi, you know, Murano family Rabbanim. Now, the Rabbi Shalom Murtara, the Av Bezdin of Amsterdam at the time, had a Talmud by the name of Baruch Spinoza. Now, Baruch Spinoza was a bright, precocious young man. He came from a very poor family, and he sat and learned Rabbi Shalom Murtara for years and years and years, until in his late teens, he seems to have had a major, major break with Yiddishkeit. And not that he wanted to be fry. He didn't care to be fry. He didn't care to become Christian. He didn't care to convert. He just had like a major hashkafic break with Yiddishkeit. And you read the biographies written about Baruch Spinoza for the first, I don't know, good chunk of after he was dead were written by Catholics, Christians who were enamored of him. So they tend to paint the Jews in a bad light a little bit. But they say that they tricked him. They got him to say his true opinions, which is not such a terrible thing to do. Many people knew what he held, and they tricked him. They got him to say his true opinions. They hold him into Bezdin in front of the Dayan, Rabbi Yitzchak Abuav de Fonseca, this Dayan who we're talking about. And he said, I'm going to give you a chance to take back what you said. You know, you're a young man. Could be in the heat of the moment. You said something that's too far that you don't really mean. He said, no, this is what I mean. I'm not backing down. And the depending on which version of the story you read, it's very dramatic. His Rebbe, Rav Shalom Murtara, comes in and pleads with him and begs him not to go down this route. You know, chazar bucha, and he won't. He refuses to. And ultimately, Baruch Spinoza is put into Cheirim by the Kehillah in Amsterdam in a very conclusive and definitive manner. He's pushed out completely. They go to the government. They convince the local government to even banish him from living in Amsterdam. And he moves to, I think, Helsinki in Finland. He writes some very, very, very famous philosophical books that make him an icon and a legend in the secular world. He's one of the fathers of modern philosophy. If there's something called the religion of science, you know, like prioritizing science above everything else, he's like a head priest of the religion of science. And he becomes totally, totally alienated from the Jewish community. But in an interesting twist, he never converts. He never becomes anything else. So he's just a bad Jew. He's not, meaning in those days, especially in the Marana community, if you weren't interested in being Jewish, you became something else. You would become Catholic, you'd become, you know, Dominican, you could become whatever, you could become something else. He was just a bad Jew. Now, the reason why I point this out, why it's so relevant, is because later generations of bad Jews very hard, very, very much tried to rehabilitate Baruch Spinoza and turn him into a hero. Because Baruch Spinoza was the idea of a person who said, I'm not going to relinquish my claim to being a Jew, I'm just not going to be Jewish. Meaning, you understand the chiluk, like I'm still a Jew. Just because you say that I'm not a maimon in Tchias HaMesim, or Chazal, or Mashiach, or Gan Eden, or even God, big deal, I'm still a Jew. I was born a Jew, you can't un-Jew me. That was Baruch Spinoza's claim. And therefore, like Jews who always wanted to push for secularism, like Moses Mendelssohn, and later on some of the early secular Zionists were extremely busy pushing Baruch Spinoza as a hero. Because he was like the prototype that you could be a Jew without being Jewish. For example, in 1930-something, on Hebrew University campus in Mount Scopus, a famous secular Jewish Zionist by the name of Joseph Klausner, Yosef Klausner, got a Polish Yid, but he was not from at all. He got up on at the end of like a marach about Baruch Spinoza, and he said at the end of it, Baruch, Achinu Ata, Achinu Ata, Achinu Ata, which traditionally in a Bezdin, if you're being Mater Acherim, the way the Bezdin would be Mater Acherim, is they would say, Achinu Ata, Achinu Ata, Achinu Ata. So you had a totally non-religious, secular Zionist in Yerushalayim in 1935, being Mater the Cherim of the Bezdin of Amsterdam from 1646. Meaning he was such a firebrand, something that was so important to secular Jews to attach themselves to, because he showed you could be a Jew without being Jewish. Now, because of this fault line over there, Shalom Murtara himself was somewhat like blighted by having had to do with Baruch Spinoza. But the fact that Baruch Spinoza was his Talmud, in many Svarim of the day, you'll see people like put like an asterisk. Like they referred to Rav Shalom Atar with like an asterisk. Now, over time, that went away. And more so than that is when his Sefer was republished in Warsaw in 1915, they got a haskam from Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, which is not so common. And Rav Chaim Soloveitchik writes in it that Rav Shalom Atar is a goyna goynim, a great man. He doesn't need my haskama. The Teichon of the Svarim doesn't need a haskama from someone like me. Befrati says that the Ber HaGoyla, Rav Moshe Ravkash, who's the Vilna Goyin's grandfather, writes about Rav Shalom Atar that he's a goyin and a tzaddik. And this is true in the Hakdamah Tevin Ezra. The Ber HaGoyla writes about Rav Shalom Atar that he's a goyin and a tzaddik. He quotes him Lahalacha and some in Yud Zayin. So he says Befrat that the Ber HaGoyla already, was masmich, put his hands on him and said that he's a goyin and a tzaddik. So he's above reproach and we don't need to do anything about it. And because of this haskam from Chaim, the Madfis of the Sefer, who we have both editions of it, in his first edition, in the Hakdamah, when he writes about Rav Shalom Atar, he writes like this asterisk. He writes that like Biyamav, Baruch Spinoza was a Talmud of his, and etc. And by the time the second edition of the Sefer was republished a few years later, that's completely taken out, and you could see the contrast, meaning like how he writes about him just like it's, without question. Kilo, there's no asterisk, and with asterisks is gone. So there are those who hypothesize that Rav Chaim Soloveitchik is the one who took away the asterisk on Rav Shalom Atar, which is like a very interesting turn of events. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik should be the one to lift the blight on Rav Shalom Atar like that. And B'chalev and Shia, this is something that took place at the time. Now, what this arose and why this is so unique for the Murano Jews was Murano Jews who had been Catholics, who were struggling to be Jews, who were somewhere trapped in the middle between being Jews and being Catholic, were very troubled by what does it mean to be a Jew? Meaning, what makes you a Jew? Could you be a Jew even without being a Jew? Could you be a Jew just if like your mother was a Jew, if you just think about being a Jewish? Like, how much Jewish do you have to be a Jew? And because of the Shaila, this led to like this big fight with Baruch Spinoza, which was a big Cherem. Now, over there, the Rabbanim who signed on to the Kehilas Cherem was Rav Yitzchak Abuav, Rav Shalom Atara, possibly Rav Nasha ben Yisrael, and a fourth Dayan. So meaning that was something that all the Dayanim and the Bezdin seeming to have came in concert with and said that someone who's Makhish Terim Misinai, who's Makhish even more than that, it can't be a Jew. Now, what was Baruch Spinoza's main Hakash? And this is not really relevant to our story, but I'll share it anyhow. Was, in short, and this is obviously an oversimplification of his views, but what he held was, nature is God. So there is no such a thing as a God. Nature is God. The fact that everything works, and that everything stims, and that everything clicks and does on its own, that's God. What you humans refer to as God is just nature. It's nature is God. So he founded like the religion of science, Kilo. Like that science is everything, nature is God. Now, this was something that's connected to Torah, and he was put into Cherem. Now, interestingly, and I digress here for 1 second, is this quote of Kilo, nature is God, that he said, got another famous Rav into a lot of trouble shortly after that. The Sephardic Rav in London in the late 1600s was with someone, Rav David Nieto. He wrote a sefer called Mata Dan, Kozri Hasheni, it was called. Rav David Nieto gave a drasha in shul, where he said, we have a quote of the drasha because he sent the letter to the Chacham Tzvi, and it's published in Shailas Shuvas Chacham Tzvi later on. But he said as follows, he said, people say about me that I say, God is nature, nature is God, and how can I say that? That's a kfira, it's not something that's appropriate, acceptable to say. He says, it's true, I say it, I do say it, and it's true. And I'll explain to you why. And he goes to say how HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hashkacha extends to everything that a person needs. He's Meirid Matar, he brings the food, he gives everyone what they need, he takes care of each person. So he says, I ask you, is nature not God? Meaning, Kilu, the fact that every human is taken care of so well, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hashkacha extends to what every single person needs in every single day, and that's through nature, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Masav, that everybody gets what they want. He says, I ask you, is nature not God? And he refused to back down. Now, this is a community that was still struggling with these exact shailas, Kilo, of how far could you push the envelope and still be considered acceptable. They sent a letter to the Chacham Tzvi, suggesting that they should remove Rav David Nieto as their Rav. And Rav David Nieto writes a letter to the Chacham Tzvi explaining what he said. He writes the drasha, he writes it, it's about a page long, he writes what his speech was. And the Chacham Tzvi says, Avada, what you're saying is correct. Chacham Tzvi says, Kfira is to say that nature is God. But to say God is nature, that's of course, that's very posh. He says, why? Because God is nature is the answer to all these people who are pursuing the religion of science. I mean, people like Baruch Spinoza and people who follow him, who are prioritizing science and making sense of everything and trying to understand how everything runs and how it works and what the system is. So for them, it's important to say that God is nature. Meaning, yeah, of course, everything you're going to be able to uncover and everything you're going to be able to find, that's just the depth and the understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hashkacha. You want to see how HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world, you're just understanding how Hashem runs the world. But that nature is God, that of course is Spinoza, and that's Kfira. So So Chacham Tzvi in a tshuva, in the Chacham Tzvi does not have 10,000 tshuvas. Chacham Tzvi has a few hundred tshuvas. One of them is literally about explaining the nuances of Kilu Baruch Spinoza's Kviridika position in contrast to a acceptable position which would be similar. So these were the shilas of the day, Kilu, that were pressing them. Lamashal, we find in many different tshuvas of the day, shilas of like, what is the Jewish status of a Murano or of a crypto Jew, of someone who isn't practicing as a Jew? The Rivash in Shailas Tshuvas, in Shut Rivash, in Tshuva Dalet, right away in the beginning, he handles a shaila of wine that was pressed by from the Anusim, from people who were Anus, meaning people who are still living as non-Jews, and they pressed the wine, what would be the din? Are they Jews? Are they not Jews? And he goes into an entire Arichas of the Tshuva to explain the Ptor of Aynes, and how the Torah looks at somebody who's forced to do something, a very, very sympathetic portrayal and accepting view of, you know, these Jews who were trapped in this hard situation. Meaning allowing them to say, even if you're not holding but living up to everything at this moment, and you're still trapped in a situation that doesn't allow you, still the Rivash was looking at them with a positive eye. The Rivash has many tshuvas, about four tshuvas, I think, where he discusses this, where he pursues this idea. The Tashbits, the Marashdam, the Mabit, every one of these poskim were handling shilas about who's a Jew, how to look at these Jews, could they be looked at as Jews, could they be included in Jews? Now, this shaila probably came to like the most, like the biggest fight that arose about this question happened between these two dayanim who we've been talking about, between Rav Shalom Murtara and Rav Yitzchak Abuav. They got into a huge disagreement about this very question, and I'll explain how. Rav Shalom Murtara gave a drasha in shul. He was the abbezin. He gave a drasha in shul saying as follows. He said that people who live their lives as goyim, meaning they're born Jews, but their bloodline is Jewish, but they live their lives as goyim, and they don't do anything to be Jewish. They have the opportunity. They're in a kehillah like Amsterdam, where they have the opportunity to come back around and to live their life properly. And they don't. He says these people are going to go to Gehenim forever and ever. He says l'dayrei dayris, Gehenim kol v'heimenim kol. They're gone. They're eradicated from the Jewish people. Essentially, meaning we all know the mission of the famous mission in Sanhedrin that says kol yisrael yeshlem chelik olam haba. We say it by Perkei Avos, kol yisrael yeshlem chelik olam haba, which implies any Jew, no matter how much he strays, Yisrael shechata af b'shechata Yisraelu. I mean, no matter how far he strays, every Jew has a chiluk olam haba. They're going to be able to get out of the einshim of Gehenim and eventually go to Gan Eden. Go to, you know, have some sort of some tchia elamis. And what Rav Shalom Murtara said in his drasha was that no, if you're a Jew who isn't Jewish, meaning if you're not Jewish b'chlal, you're not, you know, related and connected to being Jewish, you're not going to have anything. You're going to be gone forever and ever. So he kilu extended the potential for einshim Gehenim much, much further than what people had in their mind. Meaning the Gemara says, and we'll go through each one of these Gemaras, the Gemara seems to limit Gehenim, the Gemara says 11 months, the Gemara says different things. The Gemara seems, Chazal seem to have limited, you know, how far a person can go to Gehenim. The Mishnah says, you know, Stam Mishnah Kol Yisrael Yeshtem Chelik Elim Haba. So it seems like every person has an opportunity. Rav Shalom Murtara came and he said, no, if you're not Jewish, just being a Jew is not enough. And he said, you'll go to Gehenim, L'deri Darius, we'll never hear from you again. Now this ignited a pashat, a firestorm in his shul. The kehillah in Amsterdam was a kehillah that was a blended kehillah, mixed of these different elements of Jews who were Jewish, who were less Jewish, Muranos, half Muranos, people who were coming back, they weren't back yet, people who had family, meaning you could have someone who was totally from but had, you know, three generations of grandparents who had lived as Catholics completely, and for him to hear that his father, his grandfather, and his great-grandfather were never going to be seen from again, never going to be heard from again, was, you know, a very harsh message that was hard for them to deal with. Now, of course, there's a great value in this message. You know, the message is, the stakes are high. You can't just say, I'm a Jew, I'm good to go, it doesn't matter how I live my life, it doesn't matter what I do. Meaning his message is an extremely valuable message to kehillah like this. The stakes are high. You have to make it back in time. Shuv yemech lefnei misaschel, you know. You have to make it back in time. You can't just you know, skate and think everything, shalom yinafshi, everything's going to be okay. But this ignited mamash like a firestorm. And people interrupted, and people pushed back, and they said, it can't be this way. And then eventually, the Rav, who became the standard bearer of the Tzatzik Keneged, was Rav Yitzchak Abuav. Rav Yitzchak Abuav spoke against it, wrote against it, and said that no, based on many different sources, that a person, every Jew, no matter how far he strays, will eventually have a way back and will come back, and he brought many, many sources. Now, this fight was raging in the Kila, and because they couldn't settle it, they decided to send a letter to the Kilim in Venice, which was a more established, you know, Sephardic community, to ask the Beis Din in Venice to be machriya the shaila. Now, I think by us this is like a strange thing to hear, like a batei dinim that we're fighting about what exactly the sentence of Gehenim is. Meaning, Gehenim is a life sentence; it's not a life sentence. Like, it's a very strange, like it almost seems like very irrelevant to our perspectives. But in the perspective of the day, these were very relevant questions that had to be debated. So they sent the Shaila to the Beis Din in Venice asking, what's, you know, be machriya between Shalom Murtara's position and Rav Yitzchak Abuhoff's position on the matter over here. And the Beis Din in Venice said that we don't want this Shaila to go onto Beis Din's records because it will look bad for the, we don't want the Goyim to see that we're talking about this. We don't want them to know how we look at this. We're not going to talk about it. But they sent them a letter from the Askin of the Kilo, the chief Askin of Venice, who I believe his name was also Abuav, or Avram Abuav, not Tafka related to Yitzchak Abuav, Avram Abuav. He's the father of Shmuel Abuav, the Dvar Shmuel, who has another famous Tshuva Sefer. There's a lot of Abuavs, but the Rav Avram Abuav writes to the Beis Din in Amsterdam a whole Arichas Dika letter where he strongly sides with Avshalom Mutara and says that Lemaisa, I hear what you're saying, that I'll be Kabbalah and I'll be different sources that you have, that, you know, Nishmas Yisrael is very halig and it's never going to be, you know, Leman Le'idach Menu Nidach, it's always going to come back. I hear what you're trying to do, I value what you're trying to do, but Lemaisa, Rav Shalom Mutara is quoting, you know, very Mefurish Dika sources, very basic sources, and you can't argue on the idea that a person could stray so far that he could go to Gehenna and lose everything. Because he says the Mishnah itself, the Mishnah from where you're coming from, that says, literally continues and says, Ve'elu she'en lem chelik alam haba. The next line in the Mishnah is, Ve'elu she'en lem. And the Gemara, the Mishnah delineates who loses it, what they lose it for. And the Mishnah says, some had yaitis who lost it, some malachim who lost it. There's many chazals, clearly says, chazal clearly themselves held that just because they said, Kol Yisrael Yesh Lem Chelik Alam Haba, doesn't mean there was an ironclad, you know, rule. Kol Yisrael Yesh Lem Chelik Alam Haba. So the Beis Din says, the Askanim of Venice say, we instruct you to back down from your position and stop arguing publicly with Avshalom Mortara. Meaning they instructed him to take a back seat. You have to back down and not argue with Avshalom Mortara. What he's saying has to be the considered the basic, you know, hashkafa that people have to have in mind. Now, it would seem, and this is a little bit of conjecture, but it would seem that after these, you know, great fights, when the Shteller came up in Recife for Yitzchak Abuhoff to take, he jumped at the chance. Meaning to have to stay here and deal with these major, you know, combative battles that were going on, it wasn't so exciting to him, and he jumped at the chance to go to Recife, which ultimately worked out and didn't work out. Meaning the Kehila lasted there for about 15 years under Dutch rule. Eventually the Portuguese take it back, and they again start the Inquisition there, and they have to all leave. And he ends up back in Amsterdam again. At the end of his life, he ends up back in Amsterdam. But this is the key of the machlekes that was the impetus for him moving on. Now, I just want to share, before we wrap it up, a few of the key sources, the sources that are motivating this machlekes. So in the Sefer, we don't have Rav Shalom Murtara's drasha anymore that he gave. But over here, you have like a 3-page synopsis that Rav Shalom Murtara wrote, or that Rav Yitzchak Abuhoff wrote for him, of what his position is. And Rav Shalom Abuhoff writes as follows. He says, he's fakert, he's being a kanoi. He says, I heard chadashim mikarabayu, new people who are not motivated to be Jewish b'chlal, who say, yeah, don't worry, as long as you're a Jew from you know, b'makar, you're going to be good to go, you're going to have Gan Eden, Gehenna's going to go away from you, you're going to be fine, he says. And I find that to be unacceptable. He says, I found people who are saying, Mizera Yehudimu, if you're from Zera Yehudi, you come from Jewish stock, Hashem will take care of you, you're going to be fine. He says, this maskela, this weakness came forth from people who think that they know Kabbalah. He says, so I think this is Rav Shalom Murtara writing this. He writes, when I was giving my drasha public, he says, this is a very interesting, like, sarcastic remark. He says, Bali Yadeh, HaKabbalah HaNemenes HaMekubelos B'chol Yisrael. It came to my hand, the real Kabbalah, the Kabbalah that has Messiah that everyone agrees with. He says, what's that? HaBraisa HaNishnas Perakamad Rosh Hashanah. So he's being sarcastic. He's saying, like, don't tell me you found in a Kabbalah Sefer, it says X, Y, and Z. It came to my hand, Pasha, he's making like, I came across this obscure old Kabbalah Sefer called Mesachtas Rosh Hashanah, where it says as follows, he says, It's a long list of various different people. He says, the Gemara says clearly, they go down to Gehenim, they're sentenced to a term that's which implies forever. You know, like generations upon generations. Fine. Then the Gemara says, Gehenim kala v'heim enim kalam. Gehenim will come to an end, and they still won't be done being burnt. So he says, I added on many more Gemaras and Chazals and different source material that implies clearly that someone could blow it, could lose it so badly that he's not going to have anything left to go back to. And he says, and if you're going to tell me that this is just a Gemara, but it's not l'halacha l'maisi, he says. He says, I'll show you that the Achreinim, now keep in mind, he's writing in the 1600s, so he calls Achreinim is what we would call Rishainim. Achreinim that he's referring to is the Rambam, the Ramban, the Mardchai, the Rosh. That's who his Achreinim are, just keep that in mind. He says, V'achreinim, ulam Achreinim ashal piyam anuchayim, umeimeyam anushayim, le'inatu yimin v'smom an adavar azeh. They didn't move, not right or left, an iota from this thing. Le'ilamadnu davar achar. He says, Kinu lefaneinu reisham edabim Rambam peregimu d'lchus tshuva. The Rambam says, Ve'elu hein, she'en lam chelik alam abal, nechrasim v'oivdim v'nidainim al-goydil rishim v'chatim l'oilam v'lo'ol me'elamim. So the Rambam writes clearly, there's a list of people who are so mufka from having a future that they go to Gehenna and then neither in l'dayri dayris l'ol me'elamim. Hapikars, Markayif, Matayir, etc. He says, the Ramban, likewise in Sharag Mol, says this as well. He says, then he throws this in, again, a little sarcasm. He says, Vina Ramban, Mekobul Gadav Chassid, Ramban nu Kabbalah. The way you say Kabbalah, meaning what you're lecturing me for not knowing, he says. Ramban nu Kabbalah, and he also says this. He never, for some reason, told us what you're telling us. Then he continues, he finds a Rush that holds like this. Then he quotes from the Marik. But the Marik says, anytime the Rush, the Rambam, and the Rif agree to something, and that's the Halacha Psukah. So he says, I found you that the Rif, the Rambam, the Rush, the Ramban, and etc. all hold like this, learn this Gemara Kapshuta, that a person could be so mufka that he could go to Gehenna and stay there. So there's nothing to talk about. This is Halacha Psukah, it's over. And he says, you should accept this, something that it says in the Nevi'im, the Ksuvim, the Mishnah, the Brisa, the Tosefta, the Talmud, Rambam, Ramban, Rif, Rosh, Ran, Rav Zrachya, Maria Barbanel, Balakeda, Rabbeinu Bachaya, Rabbeinu Yoina, Menachem Erikanti, Maria Bua, Balmaneir Samar, not the Maria Bua who he's arguing with. He quotes many, many, many Svarim that he found that seemed to learn this Gemara Kapshuta, and he therefore says it's not even a conversation. It's open and shut. Of course, a person could stray so far that he loses his Jew card, meaning that he loses his ability to say, Koy so yesh lam chelik alam abba. Now, he says this, that he's doing this as a kanoyis. He says, "Bekanoyis kinas Hashem elikid tzvakis." I'm doing this to kilu stand up for Yiddishkeit and say, no, you can't just say, separate Jew from Judaism. Meaning, if you're not Jewish, you're also not a Jew. That's the premise of his whole piece. Now, I can't really go into the answer, the rebuttal is Ritzik Abu of his Machberes Nishmas Chayim, which is like a 20-page maracha, where he finds many different, many, many, many Kabbalah sources, some early, some late, some very modern, some very recently to him, who say, all talk about the Kedusha of a Nefesh Yisrael, and how it can't be separated, and eventually, no matter what, it will come back, we'll have a Tchiyah, we'll have an ability to have some sort of Gan Eden, and he has a long, long rebuttal for this. Now, the part that caught my eye, that really tied it to what we were talking about last week, was that he says, and he has a few paragraphs where he says that even if it's Yitachon that a person could lose his own chelik l'olam haba, and you have nothing to stand on, a person could have no leg to stand on, he could lose it. He says, but he brings many different sources that the tzaddiki hadairis, the tzaddikim who pass through Gehenim, he writes, or come near Gehenim, will be able to take you and you'll be some sort of like, second fiddle to the tzaddik. Some sort of, really what he's coming off is a Gemara that says that when the ashes are fully destroyed, it says, the Gemara says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes, he collects the ashes, he spreads them under the legs of the tzaddikim, which he learns based on many different Kabbalah Svarim means that even someone who loses his own, his own ability to stand on his own two legs will be mefazran tachas raglei tzaddikim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will gather them back in and collect them, their ashes. So now this is just, I can't go into all his sources and whatever. If someone wants to read more about the exact pratim of Gehenim, you can take a look at the Reishis Chachma in Shara Yira and Perek Yud Gimel. He brings a brisa called Masechtas Gehenim, which describes in great vivid detail the exact mechanics of Gehenim. We could look at the Ramban in Shara Gemul, which is the end of a Sefer Teres Adam, which is the Hilchos Avelus. He writes, Kilu, the Neshamas, what happens to the Neshamas? Avelus is what happens to the bodies, to the people who stay behind afterwards, what happens to the Neshamas, and he goes into Maricha. So someone wants more about the exact Pratim of Gehenim, the Shem Shel Gehenim, where exactly Gehenim could be found. There's much, much more to talk about, but I'm not really going to go down the rabbit hole. What I just wanted to highlight was this, Kilu, integral, you said this like a machlekes between these Gedalei Achronim. If Gehenim is like a life sentence, if a Jew who's not Jewish goes and that's it, he's cut off the tree, or Gehenim for all Jews is the same, meaning some will get more, some will get less, but Gehenim just means it's a clarification process. It's not really something that destroys Jews. And the reason why I went down this rabbit hole is because the Maria Bov relies on the same thing that this Chassidish story about the Bach was told upon. Okay, Mitzvah, we're going to go back to some more halachic Gehenim in the next few weeks. We continue.